You're listening to Extra Time Radio.
Hey, you ready to rock the place out, dude?
Ultimate hype man.
He was on fire last night.
And it's all because you guys like to drink beer.
Word association before we get you out of here. Eddie Johnson.
Twister.
When will we see Simon Borg taking over Snapchat and MLS?
Do you know
what Snapchat is, since winky faces are not your thing?
No, I do. And Snapchat wanted all my contacts, and I refused to give it my contacts.
Simon, you are an idiot.
We can't prove it.
That's why he's here.
From New York, you're listening to Extra Time Radio on MLSsoccer.com and SiriusXMFC Channel 94. I'm Andrew Wiebe. With me, Simon Borg and David Goss. As always, here on this Monday, ahead of a U.S. men's national team game, their final one of 2014. We'll get up to U.S. Ireland in just a second. We'll talk U.S. Colombia, a lot of things from the MLS world to get to here on this Monday as well. Dispersal draft. The order has been chosen. We've also got some new rules or some new wrinkles to the expansion draft. Bob Bradley is our guest here on this Monday. He'll join us in the second segment to talk Stabæk and everything going on there. But guys, turning to this, I mean, I'm having to artificially get myself amped up. I'm going to have to raise my energy levels because I look outside and it's not even 4:30 p.m. and it's nighttime. What? I don't feel like I can survive the time change.
Really?
Yeah.
You're so looking Andrew at me like Wiebe, I'm crazy. Andrew Wiebe's getting frazzled because the sun goes away.
Yeah.
Really?
Simon was just blown away.
I would have
away.
Issues
I didn't even
for,
say that.
I couldn't understand I if he didn't know anyone. What I was talking about or if he was just secretly judging me. But
I am judging you. I'm totally judging
yeah,
you.
Yeah, it wasn't that secret. Was
what
it?
Kind of person gets scared because
it's
the sun's
scared,
gone? You're kind of scared. You're depressed
disoriented,
because the sun's out.
Disoriented. Trying to, you know, I'm just kind of tired. You look outside and it's dark. I mean, I feel like everybody else has this.
Listen, I'm ready to go. I'm excited.
You weren't that depressed as you were sucking on the candy at the desk.
Oh, wow. Boy. Wow, boy. All that, you know, people talk about animosity.
You were making
in
a lot of noise,
Simon. What do you think? You think Andrew has 5 more years left? I mean, the way he's eating. Come on,
years left for what?
To live. What else?
Come on.
No, he was really sucking hard on.
I know you're sitting there thinking.
Simon might kill me before that happens if I if I do that anymore. That's really one of your pet peeves, certainly. But now I know how to annoy you even more, so that's great. let's move on to the U.S. national team, guys. We'll get to the MLS stuff in just a second. That's what everybody's talking about. So it's a 2-1 loss to Colombia, and kind of the big theme after this one is yet another late goal. It's 3 straight matches that the U.S. has given up a goal to either draw in those other 2 matches, as they were in the last international break, and in this case, lose to Colombia at Craven Cottage in London on a late goal.
Great atmosphere.
Yeah, there was. There was a debated offside call in this one that Colombia scored on. There was a handball the U.S. got, a handball that the Colombians didn't. But let's take it general, Simon. What did you take from this game? Because what I took is that it was a lot of the same old, and it was almost tough for me to watch at times just because I just felt like I was watching the same game that I'd seen, you know, all 4 times since the World Cup.
Overmatched, no possession, and for me, what bothered me even more, no fight. Like, I just felt like, you know, they were just hanging on, and, you know, and I know it's a friendly, but, you know, I would love to see some attitude, just an edge about mm-hmm. this team that I didn't see in that game.
And guys that bring that edge, you know, the guys that you would assume would, the Michael Bradleys and the Clint Dempseys of the world, they weren't here. So
yeah, but you had Jermaine Jones. You had Beckerman. I just feel like in terms of matchup, the U.S. is gritty and strong down the middle, and Colombia is happy to go down the wings. And so I didn't think it fit well in terms of you bring Beckerman there to break up play, but Rodriguez and Cuadrado are going to go down the wing. So he wasn't in position to really match up against them. So I thought that hurt the U.S.
I think Jermaine Jones in the back continues to be a mistake. I don't want to hear this. Oh, he's evolving. I mean, Jurgen Klinsmann is really selling us a bill of goods if he's saying, you know, he's really doing well. He's really taking this position on.
I actually disagree with you.
Yeah, I thought he was fine back there. My issue is it doesn't feel to me like you're building for that future. Jurgen Klinsmann really posed the end of 2014 and 2015, especially in the immediate aftermath of the World Cup, as a time to try out new pieces, as a time to figure out where this team went to in the future. And to repurpose Jermaine Jones as a center back doesn't make a ton of sense to me in those cases. What about Omar Gonzalez? I know he's with LA right now, but what message are you sending him? I mean, he's a young guy that you'd think has room to progress more and more. And
I think as long as Jermaine Jones has years he can give you, Let him just make an impact in the midfield. Just put him in the midfield. Why, with this whole experimenting in the back, I don't understand. Yeah. What I mean, put
it's
someone
not,
else there.
It's not like he was done doing a job in the midfield. You weren't like, look, your legs are gone after starting
exactly.
X games in the World Cup. Yeah, I'm
well,
with
I think the thing is he wants ball-playing center backs, and I don't think he thinks he has them. So what does he do? He turns a center midfielder into a center back, and that's progression. That's change for him. I think John Anthony Brooks is a player who can play on the ball. So in that style, he's clearly a player that he wants to stick with. I don't know if he thinks Omar Gonzalez is that guy.
Yeah,
and I don't know if he thinks Matt Beisler is. So that could be part of putting Jermaine Jones there is, hey, I have him for five more years. I have center midfield options. He's not my center midfield option. So if I want him part of this program, I'm putting him there. Or if I don't have a player that plays this way, I'm going to find someone who can. Because Jermaine Jones clearly has the physicality to play at center back.
Yeah, I think he does, but he doesn't have the instincts. And he's shown
exactly.
that. He's shown that in these two games. The thing is, I know you want a ball playing center back, and I think you're not giving Matt Beisler enough credit because I think he's one of the best, if
I'm
not
just,
the best in MLS. Omar Gonzalez, that one I can buy a little bit more. He's more of your physical presence. I just don't know that Jermaine Jones gives you that much from that position. He's more of a guy that I think is more effective playing those balls out of the midfield. And he's a guy that, as Matt Doyle says, goes for the hero ball a lot. He's going to try to play a ball that more times than not does not complete and out of the back. I don't know how well that works. Look, Jermaine Jones won't be around for this game against Ireland, so we won't have to debate that one any further. So let's move on just a little bit to the team that we think will face the Irish. So, you know, Robbie Keane for Ireland, the captain heading home. Of course, LA plays this upcoming weekend in the first leg of the Western Conference Championship. DeAndre Yedlin went back as well. Lee Wynn went back, and DeMarcus Beasley. No games for him, but I believe, according to reports, at least that's what they're saying, is that he has some personal business to handle in Mexico. Has a young daughter, so that's speculation on my end. But he's not in this camp either way. What do we see in the lineup, Simon? What do you think? Wholesale changes? Rubio Rubin and Josie Altidore are up top again? Same midfield? Well, Beisler in?
The thing with Rubin is, are we calling him Ruben or Rubin?
We're calling him Rubes.
Because we're
on
the
a
thing
first
with
name
Rubes
basis.
Is that he's apparently missed practice on Monday because he was ill. And so, you know, are we going to see him? I'd like to see Bobby Wood start. I know people are killing him because of maybe his final ball, his final product in the box, and that it's not there. But I still think he brings a lot of energy, and he makes that team really dynamic. I think he can help Josie Altidore.
I think he popped up in good places. One of the complaints I got from people about him was that he found himself on the ground a lot. I think a few people that I felt that I know were watching him said that he found a way to find himself, whether it was diving or whatever, to find himself on the ground.
He's a young guy, hasn't got a ton of playing time recently. There's no doubt he's not coming in on, like, you know, he doesn't have his sharpest edge, so to speak, right now. But I'm with you, Simon. If Rubio Rubin's not in there, I really want to see a two forward lineup with Josie. Just tired of seeing him isolated up top, and I don't know that Wondolowski's a guy that you play with Altidore. Unless
I want to see Discord close to Altidore. And then on the wings, play Bobby Wood on the wing.
Okay.
As a wide mid.
Okay, so what's ideally – give me your 11 here.
Oh, man. I haven't drawn it up. But I'm okay seeing Morales or Beckerman in the hole alongside Jermaine Jones. I'd go 4-2-3-1.
Jermaine Jones isn't going to be there.
Oh, that's right, because Jermaine Jones is gone. So I would still do a 4-2-3-1. I think that suits this team the best in terms of the players you have. I use your wingers up top. Wide is Bobby Wood and Ruben. Maybe throw in Julian Green if you think, you know, I don't know what he's going to be able to give you here. We're reading the German press saying that he's one of the worst acquisitions.
Yeah, we'll get to that in a while. There's not good words from Kicker when it comes to the Germanicans there in the Bundesliga.
Bedoya to me is a better guy in a lot to sit alongside, if you don't have Jones, to sit alongside Beckerman than is Discrude. I would have Discrude. I want to see him further up the field. And aside from that, I mean, the defenders are what they are in terms of availability. So you go with who's
not
available.
Not a ton of options there.
Well, the only question right now is with Yedlin gone, is it going to be Johnson or Timmy Chandler?
I think it's Chandler
right back.
I think it's Chandler because I think he wants to keep Johnson in the midfield. I thought Johnson looked, frankly, this was maybe the game against Colombia was maybe his worst game in a U.S. shirt that I've seen so far. Out of sorts, just not on the ball, making bad decisions when it came to positioning and when to push, when not to push. Not a good game for him. I think he'll be in the midfield. I think he'll keep it pretty standard. I think Bedoya will be out left. I think Discrude in that attacking midfield spot. I hope to attacking players up top and Josie and whoever it may be, and then I think it'll be Bradley in the back. But I think if he goes double pivot, I want to see Morales. But Beasler and Cameron, I would I was going to say I would bet something on that, but with Jurgen, I'm not going to bet anything. I just think that's what will happen, and then you'll, of course, see Garza on the left. And word is we'll probably see Raimondo in the back there. So an interesting one to check out. You can check that one out. On Tuesday, 2:30 p.m., ESPN2 and ESPN Deportes. Let us know what you think in the aftermath of that one. Of course, we'll break it all down on Thursday. But there's a lot more to talk about with the U.S. than just that, guys. U.S. Player of the Year, or Athlete of the Year, I guess we should say, came out. The ballot is six players. It's already been voted on, I believe. It'll just be announced. These are the six that were up for it. It was Beckerman, Jones, Dempsey, Fabian Johnson, Tim Howard, and Alejandro Bedoya. Dave, get on your stump right now. Who's getting it? Who should get it?
Jermaine Jones, because the biggest moment of the year was the World Cup, and he played at his best, and I think he was the best field player at the tournament. And so, therefore...
For the U.S.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, that's for me. I think Tim Howard performed well, but he is a goalkeeper. It's different. I think Jermaine Jones was a star out on the field, and then came to MLS, and now has the potential to win an MLS Cup in his first quarter of a season there.
Yeah, the problem for me is all these guys have had moments. I don't know that anyone was really consistent. If you're going to go with a guy who maybe represents 2014 for the U.S., it's going to be Howard. I think it's going to be Howard. Who votes for this?
It's U.S. players, mm-hmm. anyone who has a cap, MLS coaches, NASL coaches as well.
Yeah, there's some administrators in there. You can find all the information at MLSsoccer.com. Yeah,
none of these guys really had an outstanding 2014. I think people end up going with Howard, even though that'd be a weird selection because he's not playing right now.
Yeah, interesting there from Howard. I think I'm going to go with Dave here. I think that Jones will get it, and I think there's a lot of reasons for that. I just think that his big moments stand out at the World Cup, and I know Tim Howard had that wonderful game against Belgium, but you know, if we're all really looking at that one with a critical eye, I don't think there were any saves in there that you're like, man, he really pulled one out of a hat.
Well, there
he
were
was
a couple
consistently
in the
Beckham, good.
In the Belgium game. There were a couple.
Okay, I'll just give you that but point, yeah, as a little gift for you. we talked about the German guys getting panned in kicker. All those guys having trouble getting going. I think it's a universal thing. Matt Beasler talked about it the other day too, that he was just exhausted after the World Cup. A lot of people coming out and saying this week that Jurgen Klinsmann's explanation that people were just run down after that World Cup and having trouble getting back at it with their club teams. What do we think about that? Is some people are calling that an excuse as to the poor form of his players.
I mean, I think it's also a question of the team that they're in. So Julian Green joins a team that's struggling in Hamburg. You know, as far as Brooks, you know, I don't have a sense that the coach and him maybe are on the same page, or the coach
but
is
that's,
pushing for him.
See, Fabian Johnson for me goes into a team he's hurt, goes into a team that's playing very well. Shouldn't Julian Green be able to get into a team because they're playing badly? You're playing badly, you need something new, he's the new option. That's the issue for me with Green. He can't find a way to get minutes on a team that's looking for something.
Right, and the moments he has played, and I've watched him, he hasn't really done much. I mean, he looks like a little kid still.
Yeah, that's the problem. That's the problem. He has that speed, and the pace is what you like, and he certainly has some sort of high level of technical ability, but it's about being able to do it against men right now, and I'm not sure that he can
do
that.
That's the feeling you get.
Yeah. I'm just not sure that he can do that right now. Well, you have to see too much of him. Real quick before we get out of here, Jozy Altidore in LA Galaxy tweeting back and forth the other day. Jozy deleted his tweet, but it was pretty much along the lines of, hey, why don't you have my agent call you? No, no means no. A lot of people took that to mean that LA was interested in him. I touched base with the Galaxy today. It all came from a tweet from a fan saying, why don't you look at Jozy Altidore? And as the Galaxy do on their social media accounts, sometimes a bit cheekily, they answered back, who? And then many people looped in Jozy Altidore, and it all seems to be a case of banter gone wrong, as kind of makes sense with Altidore deleting that tweet. But something a lot of people were talking about, figured I'd bring some clarity to it for you guys. Let's move on to MLS, speaking of. Let's go to the...
But if it's really banter, why would you delete it if you're Jozy Altidore?
You just don't want to deal with all the BS that comes with it. But in this day and age, you're getting screenshot immediately.
Yeah,
so
I think deleting tweets, is worse.
Yeah, deleting tweets is almost... It's almost, yeah, you're right. It's almost worse. It's almost like an admission of guilt in some senses, or like, oh, screwed up there. Better get rid of that.
Or in my case, your ability to spell. Inability to spell.
Yeah, we've seen that on the ETR account from time to time. Let's move on to the expansion and dispersal drafts, guys. Some news coming out last week. We talked about dispersal. Who maybe was the guys to go for when it came to Chivas USA if you're a team picking. We didn't know the order, though. Now we do. Here's just the top five for a little taste, and I'm going to have us try to predict this top five. FC Dallas off the top. New York City FC picks second. Sporting KC third. DC United fourth. And the New England Revolution fifth. As you can tell, that's four of the five teams from the playoffs that are in the top five of this thing. One envelope given to teams that missed the made the playoffs, two to teams that missed. So obviously that waiting process didn't exactly work out like people thought they might. But you're FC Dallas, you're at the top of the order here. Who do you take, Simon? There's some options here.
There's no doubt in my mind it's Marky Delgado. Just from what we've noticed, from what we've seen, the tendencies of Oscar Pareja, the players he likes, I think he's just too versatile. He's young, he's technical.
U20 international.
He has an upside. He'll work hard
for
you.
Had an injury, but you know, you'd think in Dallas, look, that he's a guy that you can work with and mold and push.
I think there's a possibility he takes, if he doesn't take Marky Delgado, Andrew Jean-Baptiste, for the same reasons that he's going to take someone young that he can develop.
Yeah.
And that he can work with. And those are the two options.
And you saw they had to move Zach Lloyd into center back this year. So maybe some depth needed there. Let's go ahead and assume it's going to be Marky Delgado for the purpose of this exercise.
You agree then?
Yeah, I do. going to New York City FC at number two, who do we think here? I mean, Dan Kennedy looks like the obvious choice.
I think Marvin Chavez.
Marvin
they
Chavez,
they go out,
huh?
They get themselves a legitimate player that helps fill their team, and they already have a goalkeeper. So I think
Josh
they go.
Saunders. Maybe they don't think Dan Kennedy is a starter for them, or they have something out on the open market that they're looking to get into.
I had Kennedy penciled in here. The only other option, I think, for them, Jason Christ, I can see him going after a Rivero player. Mm. You know, that technical player, mobile, can play a few positions for you. I know he's coming off an injury.
If he's playing.
Correct. I know he's coming off a scary injury, but that's one I think that they could take a gamble on. But I think it's Dan Kennedy, no?
Yeah, that's what I would guess as well. And I don't think it's a center back for them just because, like, Andrew Jean-Baptiste doesn't make a ton of sense when you already have Paulie Watson, Sorobo. Yeah. Could make sense there. He's got a lot of upside. Had some tough times here in the last couple seasons. At three, Sporting Kansas City, I find it hard to believe that Jean-Baptiste gets past Peter Vermees. The only thing that could throw that off is just kind of the back and forth that Baptiste has had so far, bouncing around a little bit. Vermees wants, I think, in general, guys that are going to be with the program and stay in line. And I'm not saying Jean-Baptiste can't do that. He's just moved around a little bit at the beginning, which makes you wonder. But I would be shocked if they didn't go for him. And if they don't, Bobby Berling is there. Maybe John Kennedy Hurtado, but I would doubt that. And I keep coming back to Leandro Barrera. He's the most fascinating guy on this list for me. He's a guy that has skill, has attacking verve, has a left foot. A lot of teams need that. Maybe there. Any thoughts there, guys?
To me, it's Barrera. I think he plays the wing the way I think Peter Vermees likes the wingers to play. Hugging the line. He's capable of combining. He's good technically. So I'd be shocked if it wasn't
Barrera. Okay, I'm going to give you two shots, DC United, New England. Who are the two you're mulling around in there, Dave?
Well, it sounds very
Let's not even go needs. Let's just go players that are going to – I mean, we've talked this one over. I can't wait till the 19th till they actually do this thing.
I think that for the Revs, I think there's a possibility that they take a Nathan Sturgis, someone that they can put in a couple different positions, especially in that center midfield area where they kind of aren't as established next to Jermaine Jones. And for DC United, I think that they go with the back line because I think they're going to lose a piece on that back line. I don't know if they can afford to bring back Sean Franklin, and based on what's going to happen in the expansion draft, I think they're going to lose a piece. So I think maybe they could go with a John Kennedy Hurtado, although I wouldn't.
Caleb Calvert, interesting name there. Nazario Coker as well. Let's go to the expansion draft, guys. Obviously, NYCFC and Orlando City are going to be doing some picking there. Some interesting news coming out of the Sounders, actually breaking this one, then confirmed by MLS. There will be allocation money given to teams who lose a player. We don't know exactly how much that's going to be, but it'll lessen the blow a little bit if you do indeed have someone taken. And there was some confusion on homegrowns and the status they have. Any homegrown on the senior roster, that is the on-budget roster spots 1 through 20, must be protected. If they're not on that on-budget roster or their generation Adidas, they do not have to be protected. So that's a distinction that you need to make out there. Simon, how do you think allocation money changes the game? Does it?
Is it new? Like, that's the one
I think so.
Was it given to other expansion drafts?
Expansion teams when we didn't get hear more allocation it. As it is.
No, I know the expansion teams
right,
do.
Right, but maybe we just didn't hear about it on the other ones. That's certainly possible, but it seems to be a new development. At least that's how it's being treated.
I don't know that it changes what you do. I think it's a nice plus if you're going to lose a player.
I think it's about rules, isn't it? You know, if say you're you're some team and you have a, you know, a guy that you're like, man, I don't know, Sean Franklin maybe. And you're like, I don't know if we can resign this guy. Maybe we don't protect him because we know if you take him, the amount of allocation money for a player of his stature is perhaps larger than.
Do you think it's going to be per play? I think you don't think it's a flat fee per player.
I don't know. That's it's all guesswork at this point. Yeah. We don't know the exact rules, so still waiting to see.
If it worked that way, where depending on the player, then you know, then there are things you have to measure there as a team. But I don't see it. I couldn't. See, I mean, I would guess the easiest way to do it would be a flat fee. Otherwise, how do you rate players? How do you put them in
buckets?
That's
a tough one. That's a tough one. We'll have to see what the official rules are. I'm sure those will be coming around here at some point. That is a fast approaching. Before we get out here in this first segment and get to Bob Bradley in the second, I've got to give you the floor, Dave. The Caribbean Cup, you've been begging for some coverage. And now the final's on Tuesday.
Except I can't watch it.
Yeah,
I'll have to try and find a way.
Trinidad and Tobago and Jamaica.
Tuesday night, 8 p.m., Trinidad versus Jamaica for the spot in the Copa America 2016.
Big, big stuff.
And Darren Maddox and hot boy Kevin Molino are leading the Golden Boot, tied for the lead with 3 goals each, and they face off on either side of this game. So a lot of intrigue, a lot of flavor in Montego Bay.
Yeah, I was going to try to get the hot boy Kevin Molino in there before you could, but you beat me to it. Like, another interesting note from this one, Simon Dawkins of Derby County and formerly of San Jose got the goal along with Maddox in a 2-0 win against Haiti in the semifinal for Jamaica.
Yeah, only the second time I think he's been with the Jamaican camp.
Yeah, Simon Dawkins, I looked at his stats. He's not made more than, I think, 10 championship starts in 3 seasons with Derby County since moving there. Maybe a guy that MLS
Darby,
teams.
By the way.
I said Derby that time. Yeah, thank you. Thank you so much, Simon. All right, well, hey, let's get to Bob Bradley in the next segment when we come back.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime at mlssoccer.com or tweet at extratime radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
Hello, this is Rubes. I play for the U.S. men's national team, and you're listening to Extra Time Radio.
Cross the river to the Jersey side.
Back now on Extra Time Radio with the guys. Those golden pipes, well, they belong to the boss, and we've got another New Jersey native with us in just a second. That's Bob Bradley of Staubach. A great season for them, picked to perhaps be relegated. That didn't happen. And Bob's here to talk about it. Without further ado, former head coach of the U.S., Egypt, and MLS sides aplenty, Bob Bradley. How's it going, coach?
Doing all right, man. How are you guys?
We are doing pretty good, pretty good. Middle of the afternoon here, a little bit late for you, but you know, I'm sure that you're still buzzing. I know it's a couple days later, but Michael, your second grandchild, now a girl. You've got a boy, you've got a girl. I'm curious how you're feeling in these moments after that. I know soccer's big, but family's bigger, and I'm also curious, what kind of grandparent are you? Like, what's this kid going to get for Christmas?
Well, my wife and I are really excited. Michael and Amanda are thrilled now for a little girl. Their boy, Luca, is just turned 2. He's a ball of fire, a lot of fun. So it's easy with him to already get him kicking the ball and running around. But now we look forward with little Quinn, and I'm sure with my wife and my daughters, she'll be well looked after.
Coach, you're wrapping up your first year in Norway, and I'm curious, before we get into the soccer stuff, you know, wherever you go in life, you always pick something up, and I'm curious, from the Norwegian way of life, what do you take away? What have you incorporated as part of your daily routine?
Well, I'm not sure, but we live in Sandvika, and my wife makes the walk into the little Centrum area 4 or 5 times a week to one of the most incredible fish places you'll ever see. And so the choices of fresh fish at the Fiskeria, leasing Torsk, you name it, they have become a staple in our diet, and we've really enjoyed that part. So I think we've taken well to what life is like here.
And the Norwegian, how's it coming along, Coach? Have you taken classes? Where do you think you're at in terms of being able to communicate?
If it's a football conversation, then I can understand most of it. But if I'm just walking along the street and somebody starts talking to me in Norwegian, it's not so easy. As you probably know, most people here in Norway speak English. And even within our team, we use English as the starting point. We've got a couple players from Ivory Coast, and so they speak English and French. We have, obviously, some American players. Their Norwegian is also not up to par. So for me, I do pretty well if I'm in the office and now the conversation is football and these guys start digging into the Norwegian. I can follow those things pretty well.
What's the one Norwegian soccer term you love to shout from the bench? The one that really you enjoy the most?
No, there are none of those. They hear all the New Jersey soccer terms. So they have learned far more about New Jersey slang than I've picked up Norwegian.
Bringing the Jersey slang over to Norway. Coach, you know, a lot of people said before this season that, look, this is a young team in Stabæk. They got a lot of players without experience, a team that was odds on to go down as it was, and you come in and you're 10 points above the drop zone, and the beginning of the season so hot, and you guys kept it up and even made it to a semifinal in the Cup. You know, looking back on the whole campaign, and I'm sure you've taken stock of the season as it was so far, you know, how do you grade yourself, your players, the people around you in the club? How do you think you guys did in this first season in Norway?
There's two sides to it. Obviously, when everybody in Norway picks us to finish dead last, then a mid-table showing is pretty good, and there were a lot of positives. A really good buzz about the kind of football we played, about the development of our young players, and some really top-notch results. So those were all the good things. But like any team I've ever worked with, I always examine everything and want to see it get better. And I think we still weren't always able to put together 90-minute performances. We still were a team that was up and down a little too much. But that's a product of young players growing on the job, getting more consistent. I give an example. We had a couple of young strikers that when you look at the whole season, Frank Bolli, for example, had 13 goals. I think he was tied for third or fourth in the Tippeliga. And at the start of this season, if anybody had offered the deal to say, hey, Bolli's going to get you 13 goals this year, I think everyone in and around Stabæk would have said, good, we're in, we take it. But that extra bit of consistency, the part where he could avoid going 4 and 5 games without a goal. These things which you see in top players, those are still things that we need to work towards. So as a team, I think we impressed, but you'll never get me to say that it's a great season when you finish mid-table. So still work to be done.
Coach, you're obviously an experienced coach, but it was your first season in Europe in a different kind of league here. I'm curious for you, when you look back at this season, what area did you feel you had the biggest learning curve that you had to really pick up the most stuff in? Aside from obviously knowing the teams.
That's the main part, knowing the teams, knowing the players, making sure that you're just familiar every game with each team's style, each team's strength, each team's weaknesses. Other than that, it's football work. My experiences over the years at different levels, I've always challenged myself. When I came here, I think the players knew from the beginning that every training session was going to get pushed in the right direction. I ask a lot in training. There's days when I'm really detail-oriented with little things that I want to see improved. There's other days where the tempo gets pushed and training is quite demanding. So I'm that, and I've always been confident in my work. I think players that I've worked with over the years would tell you that things were done in the right way. And when you have experiences coaching very experienced top players, that's how you get better. That's how you get tested. And when you work with those kind of players and they see that things make sense every day and they feel good about what's going on, then you always have the confidence, no matter where you go, that you can take care of things in the right way.
Now, Coach, you know, I didn't have the opportunity to watch much Super League in this year. Can you describe to me what kind of team this was? What did you, you know, what did you have some formation that you went to or found that, that was the best for you guys? What was the style you tried to impart on them? Lots of reports about some good-looking soccer coming out from Stabæk.
Yeah, I think our team played good football. We had a fluid way of moving on the field. When we had the ball, our ability to play quickly, make little moves to create space. I think we did a good job of going forward in different ways. I find that there's so many teams work hard on getting crosses in and getting in from the flanks. But I think what we tried to do this year was to find a balance that we knew how to use the width of the field. We knew how to get players who could come from the outside in. But we also knew that when the back line on the other team got stretched out a little bit, how we could find windows and go through the center. And so I think these are things that you see in good teams. And we tried to work in a way where we made the entire package better. We played a combination of sometimes 4-2-3-1, other times 4-3-3. When you consider the three guys in the midfield, whether it was at times pretty fluid or in other moments, one holding a little bit more with two in front, or sometimes two where one would be in front of them, I think we found good ways to utilize our players in the midfield with Fredrik Brustad. He's got great speed up front. He had been more a pure right winger in the past. We played him a little bit more central, but then made sure that we took advantage of his abilities to drift wide and create things coming from the outside in. We used Bully sometimes as a striker, but also sometimes he played from the left side as a forward, coming from outside, and he's a right-footed player where he was pretty effective getting into the box coming from the left flank. So a lot of good ideas. Defensively, we worked hard when we lost the ball to see if we could win it back quickly, but we also tried to make sure that if we couldn't press, that we knew how to reorganize ourselves and make it hard for teams in the middle of the field. And when a little more space opened up, that was something that we could take advantage of with our speed. So one of the things that I think people appreciated is when you look at all the goals that we scored this year, that was a really wide range of goals, and a lot of them were good team goals. So you got a good picture that the attacking part of it worked in a good way because we were able to create a lot of chances and still score a pretty good number of goals.
As far as you go, has there been any interest in your services from anybody else? And I think, correct me if I'm wrong, that you have one more year on the current contract with Stabæk. What do you see your career as moving forward here?
Well, there has been interest. So I've had some discussions with a few different clubs. The people at Stabæk understand that when the season ends, that's part of the business. And so all lines are open. And I'll see if anything develops there. But as you said, I came here with the thought that it was a two-year project. And I'm also excited to try to build on this season. So it's football. And you never know when somebody's watching and thinks maybe you could be a good fit in their situation. But as I've also said many times, you can't spend all your time worrying about what comes next. So we'll see. That short window at the end of the season.
Now, Cody, you mentioned kind of what other players might have got you in for. You know, hey, this guy needs a situation out of his own club. You know, I hate to harp on the topic with you, but what do you want out of a new club? If you were to move, if you were to go, when you look at where your career might go, what are the requirements for you? What makes you excited when you see an opportunity or talk to somebody in that sense?
I'm always excited to work in a club that is motivated, has a chance to be successful, has a history, has great support. All coaches love to work in situations where the club, the facilities, things are done the right way. We're not all able to handpick our situation. So when I had the chance to come to Stabæk, I knew that we start in Stabæk as a small club. I mean, I still think back to going into the stadium for the first time, and the locker room is small, and down the hallway there was a small little room where it seemed more like a storage closet than anything else. But I saw a few old stationary bikes in there, and I said, come on, this needs to be a space we can use. So we started a project. We cleaned it out. We got a few new bikes. We added some of the things that we needed so that we can still get some work done before training or right after training. I brought a young coach that I had worked with in Egypt, and Tomek Kaczmarek, with me to Norway. I met Tomek out in Los Angeles when he was doing some internship work with Athletes Performance. And in terms of fitness work, movement-based work, I think he's excellent. And the players really responded well to him when I was in Egypt. And so I think the program that we put in place this season, it was demanding. We trained hard. Yet we had very, very few injuries, and so that's a real credit to Tomek. So, you know, whenever you think about where you work, you try as a manager to say, what kind of support, and then how do we get enough of the right things going so we have a chance to be successful?
Coach, you mentioned that the room there and it needed to be cleaned up. And I was reading another story that you were, I think the one in Sports Illustrated, and you were talking about coming in and saying, maybe this is just a little bit too small. And obviously it's worked very well for you here so far. But now I wonder, what's the one thing that you've done or whatever it might be at Stabæk that you never would have imagined you would have done somewhere else? Were you helping scrub out that room? I mean, what's it like at this club in that sense?
I mean, it's a small club where everybody has to pitch in, tremendous volunteers, but good people. And you can tell that they appreciate it when you include them, when you make them feel like they're important and part of things. You could get any of the different equipment men that I've worked with over the years on your show, and I think they'd all tell you the same thing, that I always tried to challenge them to do the job well, but I also made sure that they knew how important they were in everything that we did. And no matter the size of the club, how you treat people is key. I've seen that so many times over the years. I think I've said on your show before that I had an opportunity on a number of occasions to get to Carrington and spend a little time with Sir Alex. And he knew the name of everybody in that place. He treated all the wonderful ladies in the kitchen like they were family. And there's something to be said about how you treat people. So when you come here, immediately you get a feel for the place. Our equipment man here is Alexander Cooper, but I immediately started to call him Sir Alex and said he's the Sir Alex of Stabæk. And, you know, people enjoy when there's give and take. People enjoy when they are made to feel important and part of things. So I've always worked that way. I still appreciate when you've got good people who work hard around the club, and I think that's an important part of making any club successful.
Coach, we'll hit you up with two questions here that are more a debate. Debates going on here internally in the United States. A lot of debate about the MLS Academy structure, and you know the decision that kids face whether to stay in the academy structure, go overseas. I'm curious when you're approached by kids, you know, who are not yet professionals, established pros. What's your counsel?
I think if a young player is serious, he has to find a good situation. And that there are examples, good and bad, all over the world. And so there's no right place. Good situations start where they care for young players. The work that gets done day in and day out is done in the right way. You've got to have the right kind of coaches. When I look around MLS, with all the improvements that have been made in the academies, there are still some places that do a good job, have really brought in some fine young coaches, or maybe they're not young, but fine coaches of young talent. And then I think there's other places where they still need a lot of work. And so, you know, for me, there's an important part that you get yourself in an environment where the training is right, where people care about young players, they understand how young players develop. There's a balance between making it competitive so that players learn what it takes to win, but they do it without overemphasizing winning. And so you've got to find people who understand the differences in these subtle ways. And then you get the right kind of education. Again, if I go back to Man United for a second, when the players that came together in the same era, Beckham, the Neville brothers, Scholes, all of these players would talk about what it was like in the academy. There was a man, Eric Harrison. They all said he was a tremendous youth coach. I think Sir Alex had a feel so that the people in the academy were doing the right kind of work with young players. So now MLS has its chance, and I think some are ahead of others when it comes to this. Some players still want to consider overseas options. It's not about going to the biggest club when you're young. It's about going to the place that does the best job developing young talent.
Obviously, MLS Cup is on its way. We've got four teams left and a lot of people trying to take their guess at what they think is going to happen. I don't know how much you've watched of the league this year. If I had to guess, it'd be a decent amount. But do you have any thoughts on these four teams and who you think come December 7th will be standing alone with that big trophy?
Oh, I don't make predictions. I stopped that a long time ago.
That's a good bet.
I need that for all of the experts, but I think in both conferences, good matchups. Certainly, LA and Seattle finished the season with two tight, good games, and now we'll see how it goes this time around. And same way in the East between New England and Red Bull. So good matchups with some important players playing well, and it always comes down to who comes through in the key moments. So I think the fans can be excited. Should be some really good games, and hopefully the season can finish on a high note.
Well, there you have it, a man who knows what it's like to see his players come through in those big moments in MLS, and now having a good time in Norway with Stabæk. Bob Bradley, head coach of Stabæk, former head coach of the U.S., Egypt, Chicago Fire, Chivas USA, all sorts of different places. Coach, as always, we appreciate all your time. Thanks for giving us a call.
Good. Thanks for having me on, guys.
Thanks, right, Coach.
Thank you. There you have it. Bob Bradley, all the way from Oslo, trying to rebuild that Stabæk squad, maybe even fielding a few offers of his own this offseason. Have to see what happens to him. In this one, let us know what you think. At Extra Time Radio on Twitter, extratime@mlssoccer.com, via email. When we come back, as always, your mail.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime@mlssoccer.com or tweet at Extra Time Radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
This is Hot Boy Kevin Molina, and you listen to X-Champ on TV.
Back now on Extra Time Radio with the guys Simon Borg, David Goss, into the mailbag here. Let's start off the top with mustaches and also a little bit on Ronaldo. Rudy in Orlando, one of our favorites, he says, Mixed Disc Rude is growing very close to Sasha Kljestan's status. Hopefully his talent doesn't drop off like Sasha. Rudy, you got that one wrong. Sasha's been playing in the Champions League, still doing his thing for Anderlecht. Don't hate on a guy like that. Come on now. He says also someone should stop Alexi because his stash has turned into creep status. That may yet be true, but I think I win the creep battle among American soccer media right now. Still trying. Simon, I can see you internally mocking me.
With Alexi Lalas, like, it starts off and you're like, whoa. But then you actually get used to it as the month goes along. That's what I find my experience with that mustache.
Yeah, you're not getting used to this one?
You have a baby face, Andrew.
Oh, okay.
And so when you put a mustache on a baby face, it's always going to be
It's just
awkward.
Weird. It throws you off.
Jarring.
Rudy says, I'm absolutely wrong about Ronaldinho, by the way. So he agreed with you guys on this one. He said he's still one of the world's best and will definitely bring crowds. Gassman says L.A. Rudy says, unsurprisingly, Orlando City. Fits the mold of the team, attracting Brazilian talent, yada, yada, yada.
Although David thinks if Kaká and Ronaldinho are on the same team, it would be a losing record.
I don't think the game would ever start. I just think they'd come out, knock it around, play around, have fun. Like, yeah, goals don't even count.
The other team wouldn't see the ball is what the way that would work.
I don't know about that, but when the other team did see the ball, I think they'd score pretty quickly because Kaká and Ronaldinho are not
I will agree with you guys. Ronaldinho off the field, huge success story. On the field, I think he'd be a headache, and I don't think he would live up to his billing. That's my personal opinion. Next up, Goose from Queens. Got to love that. I just imagine that you're surrounded by people named Goose, Simon, at your humble abode out there in the borough. Come on, guys. You live in Brooklyn. That would just be me. And you've never been to Peter Pan in Greenpoint? This is a donut place. Apparently, I'll have to go check it out. I live by Dough, which I rate highly. But he's mad about the Man City, New York City FC unveiling thing and the jersey that we talked about. He says he feels like he's been punched in the stomach. He knows Man City's paying the bills, Goose says, but he feels like they're rubbing it in. How do we feel about it being so Man City, like so just hearkening straight to the mothership?
I think it's early. It's early for this team. It hasn't established an identity yet that I think you can latch onto if you're a fan. So I think as the announcements come, as it becomes more of a team, as the preseason games start, my gut is people will start feeling differently about that whole Man City.
Like, yeah.
You'll start seeing a team acting on its own. You'll identify with players, with a coach, with a playing style. It'll change.
Yeah, I think it will too. I hope it does. I do think that right now we're seeing kind of the manifestation of the worst fears for kind of the hardcore NYCFC people that are like, look, we don't want to be little brother. This is New York City. It doesn't work like that. And I would agree with them in that sense. You've got to find a way to give this team its own identity, its own separate identity. And though it will always be tied in, I don't think it can be reliant on that relationship. Maybe that's just me here in the boroughs. You have an opinion?
I just think it's a simple jersey and it's the color, so that's why everyone's going there. I don't think it's supposed to be a Manchester City copy. I just think it's a light blue jersey, and so that's where everyone's mind goes. But I think I kind of agree with Simon that once they start playing and they're their own team and doing their own things, my complaint would be it's a simple jersey, but I don't think it's going to be a Man City copy.
And you heard Claudio Reyna. There's some moves coming. There's some building coming. You're going to start to see the pieces come together, and that's pretty important.
And I think Orlando City, if you're comparing expansion teams, they're farther along in that identity process.
Because they have
partly
a team.
Because the stadium, the fans are already doing their march.
You've
seen them play. Mm-hmm. They have players. They have a coach who's been long and we've seen them.
They have a youth academy.
Yeah. They have it all.
Let's stay in New York. Matt from Brooklyn. He's in Clinton Hill /Bed-Stuy. That's exactly where I am, Matt. So if you ever want to get a beer, let me know. Longtime listener and frequent emailer says, but he's mad at us. He says he's tired of us avoiding any and all complimentary language for the Red Bulls. He's got to speak out. Simon, he's crushing you on the supporters sections, of course. I think that's fair. I've been crushed on it too. That is good. But he's coming at me on this one. He says I have to be called out because Roy Miller, I said Roy Miller, intentionally went into Franklin with his boot up with an intent to injure. He says implicit in my agreement of the straight red card. I'm flat out dumb for that. Now, watch the replay. He's got his eyes on the ball, yada, yada, yada. Do we still think that's a red card? They appealed it, and they got rejected by all three of the people that review it. My contention is that it's still serious foul play that you probably shouldn't be challenging for a ball with your foot at face level with your cleats up. End of the day, whether you intended to do that or not, that's foul play.
Just because you get a red card doesn't mean you meant to injure him.
Right.
It just meant that what you did endangered the guy's safety. Mm-hmm. So, you know, sure, Roy Miller didn't mean to take his head off or his shoulder off, but that's that move, I think, deserved the red card.
One thing we're looking for during this week, U.S. men's national team apart, MLS-centric, ahead of these conference championships, what's the one storyline that you're watching?
To me, it's got to be the Henry at Gillette Stadium. I know it's not doesn't have anything to do with leg one, but I think that that dynamic changes what happens in leg one. You know, do the Red Bulls go all out? Does Henry go all out? So that's the one that intrigues me.
I think it's Landon Donovan. I don't think you can avoid that. And if he puts on a show again, is he the greatest? You know, I mean, he's already considered the greatest, I guess, everything. Mm-hmm. But that's just the icing on the cake.
Yeah, icing on the cake. I don't know how you got confused with that. Look, Landon Donovan,
We can clearly see David wants him to lift MLS Cup.
Well, so that's the thing is I don't know if I do. But
clearly, we see right through those comments.
I enjoy watching him play, and I think it was fun that coming into that second leg versus RSL, it was like, you know, his career might be over. Okay, and then he put on a show.
Look, the drama we know is surrounding Landon at this point. It's the one-off here. Will he get it done? We'll have to see. Let us know what you think ahead of Thursday's show. Any questions you have about the conference championships, we want to have them. We want to go over them. Right here in the mailbag. Let us know what you think of the show. You know how to get us? And enjoy your Monday. Have a good one, everybody.